So as I said, this is the Mind and Heart Show. This is your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, here on WPVC, 94.7 FM, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10, and we deal with all matters of the mind and heart, including mental health, stress, life transitions, parenting, spirituality, relationships, and so much more. You can join us by visiting our Facebook page, which is Mind and Heart Show, and you can post a comment or a question there. You can send us a tweet at MindHeartWPVC or email us at MindHeartWPVC@gmail.com. If you want to join the discussion, you can call us here in the studio at 434-284-9470. We welcome all opinions and points of view. The only ground rule is that we maintain civility during our discussion. On the Monday following our show, you can always listen to us again on our podcast, which is uploaded to cvillepodcast.com. That's C-V-I-L-L-E, podcast, one word, P-O-D-C-A-S-T.com. And just put Mind Heart in the search box, and our podcast will come up for you to listen to. And this morning, I'm joined in the studio by my producer, Morgan Geyer, who keeps things running smoothly, and hoping Morgan had a good holiday and a happy new year. So this morning, we're going to talk about New Year's resolutions. It's a time of year when everybody's thinking about losing that extra 5 pounds or quitting smoking or exercising more or whatever the resolution might be. And we usually start this discussion by saying it doesn't help at all to look back to all our failed resolutions for the last year that we made this time in 2015, because that's just turns out to discourage us and not help looking forward. And we end up with a lot of regret about what didn't happen, and it can really undermine any new commitments that we might have for the new year. So we're going to talk about New Year's resolutions this morning, what works and what doesn't work. So please join the discussion, and we'd love to hear from you about your experience with resolutions. It's often a time where we start out with the best of intentions. Everyone's making their list of things they want to change coming up in the new year. And it's interesting because I'm not sure how this tradition got started with New Year's resolutions. It's sort of like maybe the idea that it's the calendar is turned, it's a new year, and we're going to do an inventory of those parts of our lives that need some adjustment, and then start out with the best of intentions to make those happen. The reality is that most of them are by March, if not by February, have probably sort of fizzled out, and that has to do with a number of factors that we're going to talk about this morning. But one of the things is often is we set our goals too high, we overshoot the mark. So we're sort of defeated before we begin because we want to lose 5 pounds in 2 weeks or stop smoking in 2 days or whatever the resolution might be. So it's important to remember that the new year isn't meant to be a catalyst for any sweeping major changes in our lives. We do that and then we end up disappointed very often. But rather, it's a time to reflect and promise ourselves to make some positive changes and set some new habits, set some new intentions. And what we know from the research, and we're going to talk about some of that this morning, is that setting small and attainable goals throughout the year, not just one single overwhelming goal on January 1st, is probably the best way to go. So small, attainable goals spread out over the year rather than one big goal on the new year, on New Year's Day. So starting small, I think the way to go there is to make resolutions that we think we can keep. In other words, we want to be realistic. If I want to start exercising regularly, it probably makes more sense to start with 1 or 2 days at the gym rather than thinking I can go 7 days a week. If I want to eat healthier, I can talk about maybe having a healthier dessert three or four times a week rather than completely turning my eating habits upside down and thinking I can change everything that radically. I think the sense of desperation sometimes that we generate around the new year causes us to set these goals way too high, and then we end up with disappointment. We end up feeling overwhelmed. We end up feeling like, you know, we failed, and that we have to do a reassessment of our whole life. So thinking about that, I mean, I think it makes sense to limit the resolutions to just a couple. Again, think, you know, what's manageable, what's doable. You know, if I say I'm going to lose 10 pounds, quit smoking, exercise more, eat differently, whatever, I'm just giving myself way too high a bar to overcome. One of the keys to achieving some success with our New Year's resolutions is to create a sort of a support network around us of family and friends. Not that it would be their job to nag us or police us, but rather just to support us and give us some moral support as we make these changes. Another option there is to join a support group of some sort. You know, if weight loss is a big deal and we're carrying a lot of extra weight, something like Weight Watchers has been proven to be effective in large part because of the support that we get from the group and the accountability that is built into going to our weekly Weight Watchers meetings. Similarly, at the gym, join a class, sign up for a class where you're exercising with other people, getting a group of coworkers together who are smokers with the intention of quitting smoking. Oftentimes what happens is 10 people get together, they'll all throw $25 in the pot and then see who can go the longest without a cigarette or whatever the standard would be as a way of further providing motivation. But given that we are such social creatures, it's very important that we share our challenges and our struggles with others to keep us motivated and keep us working at our goals. Very often, our New Year's resolutions have as I said a moment ago, a very high standard, even bordering on being perfectionistic, so that any minor misstep or any minor problem completely undermines, feels like failure and undermines our longer-term goal. It's that old issue of letting the perfect become the enemy of the good. You know, is it better to lose 5 pounds than strive for 10, and the first time you have a candy bar, you throw in the towel because you feel like you just aren't going to get there. So one of the things that's necessary is that we also create a resolution that we're going to bounce back from our mistakes, that we're going to allow ourselves lapses, and that we're not going to think that we fail completely if we do have a lapse of some sort. So those are just some initial thoughts about New Year's resolutions and how do we stack the deck in our favor. You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We're here every Saturday morning talking about all matters of the mind and heart. And we'd love to have you join us. You can post a question or a comment on our Facebook page, which is Mind and Heart Show. You can also send us a tweet at MindHeartWPVC. With a question or comment, or an email at mindheartwpvc@gmail.com. And you can call us here in the studio. The number here is 434-284-9470, and we welcome your phone calls and your comments about the topic for today, which is New Year's resolutions. And this is the time, obviously, where this is a topic that's on a lot of people's minds because, you know, usually we've overindulged for the holidays, so we've picked up those extra pounds we want to take off. We've decided we're going to stop smoking, or we've decided that we're going to exercise more, or all the things that we typically ask of ourselves around this time of the year. one of the secrets to the success here, I think, is that we established what are called process goals rather than outcome goals. So instead of saying, I have to lose 20 pounds, which is an outcome goal, we would turn that around a little bit and say, create a process goal, such as go to the gym 3 times a week. And then by doing that, A, we don't focus so much on the actual number of pounds lost, but we focus on what it's going to take to get there and let the weight loss take care of itself. There are these days many apps available that you can get on your phone or on your laptop or your tablet that will help with this. There are apps that have to do with dieting. There are apps that have to do with nutrition, with smoking. So you may want to do a search at the Android store or the iPhone store and see what apps are there that might give you some help. I'm not expert in that, but I know they're out there and I know people have used them with some success. Generally what happens, back to talking about our New Year's resolutions, generally what happens is the first couple of weeks after the New Year go fine. And then it's only when we get to February, mid-early February, that we start to see backsliding. The sort of a lot of the motivation at that point has been used up, and we just tend to fizzle out sometime during the month of February. We're going to hear a podcast in a little while from Dr. John Norcross. He's a psychologist at the University of Scranton in Pennsylvania. And he's done a lot of research in this area of New Year's resolutions. And his studies indicate that probably about 50% of the population makes New Year's resolutions. And these include weight loss, we've touched on exercise, stopping smoking, better money management, debt reduction. Those tend to be the top things about which people make New Year's resolutions. There's another psychologist in Canada that's looked at this issue, and his point of view is that resolutions are a form of what he calls cultural procrastination. In other words, an effort to really reinvent ourselves and using resolutions in an effort to motivate ourselves. He argues that oftentimes when we go into this situation, we're really not ready to change our habits, particularly bad habits, that we just sort of create false hope for ourselves, but there's always a part of us that's not sure we're gonna make it or be able to stick with it. So what happens is if we make positive commitments or affirmations, but we don't really believe them, then they tend not to work, and then we tend to feel disappointed, as though we've let ourselves down, and then this whole cycle of self-recrimination and failure gets set in motion, which is really contrary to trying to keep our resolutions for the new year. The other thing that we run into is folks thinking that if they manage to lose the weight or reduce the debts or exercise more, that somehow their entire life will be changed and everything will be perfect. And when that doesn't happen, it's easy for us to get discouraged and then revert back to old behaviors. In other words, we put way too much stock in in the completion of our goals for our New Year's resolutions. There are other people in the field that tell us that in order to really change our behavior, really keep our resolutions, we need to change how we think about things, including our habits that we'd like to change. There's been some imaging studies, brain imaging studies, that tells us that these habitual behaviors like overeating or smoking or overspending really result from habitual behaviors that are the result of thinking patterns that create certain pathways in the brain, so that we have to really change our thinking in terms of starting to change our habit patterns. And I'm going to talk later in the show this morning about some of the research on what tends to work there in terms of how we change our thinking and therefore change our habits. So we're talking this morning about New Year's resolutions, what works and what doesn't work. You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, and I'm joined in the studio this morning by my producer, Morgan Geyer, and she's keeping the board running smoothly here this morning, so thanks to Morgan. We're going to take a short break to listen to Scientific American Minute, I believe, and then we'll be back and we'll do a check of the weather and continue the discussion, so stay with us.
This is Scientific American's 60-Second Science. I'm Christopher Intagliata. Got a minute? Every winter, some 20 million tons of salt are dumped on America's roads. And that sodium chloride melts ice or prevents its formation, helping to prevent accidents. But road salt has its downsides.
This is actually not very economical because salt is mainly corrosive.
Seda Kizilel, a chemical engineer at Koch University in Istanbul, Turkey. She says salt's corrosive effects don't discriminate. They affect
cars, vehicles, and also for nature, plants, microorganisms.
So Kizilel and her colleagues designed a road substance that can de-ice itself. They started with a polymer called SBS, commonly added to strengthen asphalt. They whipped up an emulsion of SBS with potassium formate, an alternative salt that's been studied as a more environmentally friendly de-icer than regular road salt. And then they added that emulsion to bitumen, the sticky black stuff in asphalt. They subjected their creation and regular bitumen to the winter weather conditions that typically lead to black ice. And it turns out the hybrid compound delayed ice formation 10 minutes longer than the control. And the samples continued releasing salt for more than 2 months. The study is in the journal Industrial and Engineering Chemistry Research. Of course, 10 minutes of de-icing is a nice head start, but it's not going to put salt truck drivers out of business.
But we are saying that during first 10, 15 minutes, when the roads becomes very icy, this material and this release of salt from this functional bitumen is going to be very useful and potentially eliminate many accidents on the roads.
The next step, she says, is to pave a test surface and drive on it to literally see what happens when the rubber meets the road. Thanks for the minute. For Scientific American's 60-Second Science, I'm Christopher Intagliata.
And we're back, and you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, and this morning we're talking about New Year's resolutions, what works, what doesn't work. Before we get back to our discussion, just a quick check of the weather. Right now we're still holding at 36 degrees in Charlottesville, a pretty chilly 36 out there this morning. Winds are slight and south at 3 miles an hour. Humidity's at 59%. So everything looks pretty good for a sunny but cool day. We're looking at a high this afternoon of about 51. No chance of precipitation and very mild winds at about 6 miles per hour for the rest of the day. Tomorrow, again, we're looking at we're looking at not quite as cold, 31 degrees low for tonight, Saturday night, with clear skies and no precipitation. And then tomorrow, Sunday, 54 degrees and no precipitation. So it looks like a couple of good days as we start the first work week of the new year. So Happy New Year to everyone out there, to our listeners. We appreciate you joining us on Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 for our show, The Mind and Heart Show. So we've been talking this morning about New Year's resolutions, what works, what doesn't work, why we get tripped up, and just to continue that discussion, so please join us. You can call us at 284-9470 if you have a question or a comment. So one of the things that happens when we set New Year's resolutions or set goals is that we create conditions very often that can backfire on us. So if we make very specific or time-bound goals, and then fail to meet them, we become too narrowly focused. These time-bound goals often lead to either our cheating a little bit or being sort of having tunnel vision and being unable to achieve our goals. So generally the recommendation is to create goals with some flexibility built in, having a broader area of focus rather than tightly made goals and outcome criteria. And this gives us the wiggle room, makes us less likely to want to cheat on our goals or fool ourselves into thinking we can cheat a little bit and have it not impact the overall motivation. So we really want to then focus on one resolution at a time rather than several of them. Just pick one that set realistic, specific goals for that one, not four or five, as I said earlier. We want to take small steps. If we feel that the goal is too big or overwhelming, too much effort, then again, we're likely to stumble and not be able to follow through. I said earlier, it's a good idea to have an accountability buddy, someone that's partnering with you to set the goal, to go to the gym with you, to monitor what you're eating together, in any of the ways we can build an accountability with a buddy. We want to celebrate our successes, acknowledge them along the way, not just have one final success, but have incremental goals for success along the way. Work on changing our thinking, as we were talking about, with new thought patterns, trying to stay present. And then perhaps also, very importantly, staying mindful. 2 weeks ago, when Pat Coffey was here, we talked about mindfulness, the ability to sort of be present with what's going on with us at the time, becoming really aware physically, emotionally, and mentally of what's going on internally, moment to moment, and using that self-awareness to monitor any possible pitfalls that are in front of us. Usually when we cheat or fall off our resolution, it's because we are sort of sneaking up on ourselves and not really paying attention or looking at the implications of what we're doing. So we need to stack the deck in our favor. We need to make it such that we skew things in terms of success and not skew things in terms of setting ourselves up for failure. So at this point, we're going to listen to a brief podcast. This is a gentleman I spoke of earlier, Dr. John Norcross at Scranton, University of Scranton, who's looked at this issue extensively over the years, and we'll hear what he has to say about New Year's resolutions. Then we'll be back with some more thoughts. Please join us. You can call us at in the studio at area code 434-284-9470. So let's go to the podcast, and we'll be back shortly.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next this hour, the psychology of New Year's resolutions. Oh, yeah, the making, the breaking, the keeping of New Year's resolutions. According to my next guest, between 40 to 50% of us participate in that annual holiday ritual, the making of New Year's resolutions. And each year we resolve what? Quit smoking, join a gym, live on a budget, lose weight, drink less, make up your own, insert it right there. And believe it or not, a large percentage of people who make resolutions actually do stick to them. So why do these folks have the right stuff while the rest of us can't keep that promise? My next guest is a clinical psychologist who has studied the successful and the not-so-successful resolution makers, and he has some suggestions for those of you vowing to make a change coming January 1st. One of those suggestions has to do with having someone phoning you a few times and reminding you of your resolution. We'll hear more about it from Dr. John Norcross. He's a clinical psychologist and a distinguished professor of psychology at the University of Scranton. Thanks for talking with us today.
You're welcome, Ira. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Well, why do we normally take this time of the year to make resolutions?
It begins with history. Worshippers in ancient Roman times would offer resolutions of good conduct to the god Janus, the two-faced deity, looking backwards and forwards. And since that time, it's become a socially sanctioned time where the plate is clean and everyone has a new opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And I mentioned a few of the resolutions we hear about. What other kinds of popular resolutions are there?
Well, they are the popular ones that you've identified. The losing weight, starting exercise, stop smoking. Being nicer to someone in the family is also makes the top five. And when the economy begins to slide, as it has recently, you start seeing a rise in financial resolutions, to budget, save money, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Are there some behaviors, some resolutions that are harder to keep and to change than others?
No, it's not so much the resolution as it is how attainable or realistic the goal is. You know, someone says, I'm going to lose 50 pounds and keep it off this year versus I think I'll struggle to keep 10 off. That's a little more realistic. Mm-hmm. So it has more to do with the realism of the resolution than exactly what the behavior is.
1-800-989-8255, talking with John Norcross about New Year's resolutions. So let's talk about some of the things you can do to be more successful in your resolutions. How can you be more successful?
Well, it all begins before January 1st by making realistic, attainable goals. We say if you can't measure it, it's not a very good resolution because vague goals beget vague resolutions. From there, one needs to establish genuine confidence that one can keep the resolution despite the occasional slips. We call this self-efficacy. That's not general self-confidence. Rather, it's specific conviction that you can change a behavior.
Mm-hmm. So you have to not be unrealistic to begin with what you can. You know, instead of saying I'm going to lose 50 pounds, I'll lose 10 pounds.
Right. Or I'll go to the gym 3 times a week instead of saying 7 times a week.
Yeah. So because you're setting yourself up for failure right from the beginning.
Right. Grandiose goals beget resignation and early failure.
I was surprised in reading your paper about actually how many people are successful.
Yes. We say the glass is proverbial half empty or half full here. In two of our longitudinal studies, 40 to 46% of New Year's resolvers will be successful at 6 months. So the half empty is, it's true, most people fail. But 40 to 46% is pretty impressive, particularly when you compare it to the people who don't try and therefore have, in our research, 0 to 4% chance.
Do people start fast and then just peter out?
That's exactly right. When you look at what we call the survival curves, about 75% of resolvers will be successful for 1 week, and then that just gradually drops down to about the 40 to 46% at 6 months.
Hmm. Interesting note from your paper is that you report that the success rate of resolutions is 10 times higher than the success rate of adults desiring to change behavior but not making a resolution to do it.
That was our last study. That's exactly right. You know, I was tired of people saying resolutions never succeed. We shouldn't even try them. And I said, well, wait a minute. These are life-sustaining behaviors. What's the alternative? So the alternative was to track people starting before January 1st with the same behavioral goals, with the same motivation to stop or to take the resolutions, but who just weren't going to do anything then. And that's it. And only 4% of them were successful at 6 months. So you go from 4% all the way up to 44, 46% by taking a New Year's resolution seriously and trying to do something about it.
So it almost seems like the people who make the resolution are more serious about completing it than the people who just say, I'll do it.
That's right. They move from thinking about it to doing it, what we call from the contemplation stage to the action stage.
Mm-hmm. And you also report that a few simple things can move people from the contemplation to the actual state. And one of those, you report, is making a phone call to a friend who's got the resolution. You say as few as 3 phone calls will get them going.
The buddy system works.
It does.
And the buddies can be coworkers, family members, friends, fellow resolvers. They don't even have to share the same resolution, Ira. It just has to be someone on your side. And for a couple weeks, people can persevere through even the more difficult environments and lacking social support. But once you get into January, the willpower begins to slip, and that's when we start counting on other people to remind us, to encourage us, and to keep us back on track.
Karen in Atlantic City. Hi, welcome to Science Friday. Karen, hi there.
I'm good. How are you doing?
Fine. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. I'm actually in Laramie, Wyoming.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of had an unusual plan this year. My husband is, 50, and I'm 55. He's about 6'2", 260. I'm about 5'2", 160. So we go through this every year. And this year, instead of buying him Christmas gifts, I set up appointments with a nutritionist, a personal trainer, and a phone support system, some friends of ours.
Wow.
So we can kind of get a grip on it. You know, at our age, we're those people that exercise a lot, do all kinds of things. We just eat too much.
So you're going way past just making a resolution. You're already into the activation stage of this.
Correct. I gave him a very loving letter yesterday about how I hope this will work for us, because I want to live a long time. My women in my family tend to live to 90.
Oh, that's nice. I hope he has returned all this goodness to you.
He has. He's actually an excellent shopper.
That comes in handy this time of the year.
It does, and he likes expensive stores, so, you know, whatever. I'll take it.
All right, thanks for calling.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Norcross, these people have gone already past the resolutions.
Well, they're ringing in the new year exactly the right way. They've tried it on their own and perhaps experienced, like most people, partial success. But now they're taking it up a step or two and saying, let's get some professionals involved. Mm-hmm. And when you make the commitment of time and money, such as appointments with a nutritionist and a personal trainer, people get more serious. In fact, I just learned today that my own brother has hired a personal trainer for my mother. That helps us all stay on track.
That's great. Let's go to Nina in Doylestown, PA. Hi, Nina.
Yes. Hi, Ira. I want to thank you for keeping me sane while I was raising three children, by the way.
You're welcome.
I find there's a big difference between motivation and inspiration,
uh-huh.
And that seems to be what my downfall is when I make a goal for myself. Could you discuss that?
Motivation
versus
inspiration.
That's a great question, and that makes all the difference. Inspiration is short-lived. It's typically emulating other people, and it'll push us for a week or two. But inspiration begins to extinguish quite quickly. And as Henry Ford once said, after that, it's 90% hard work. Inspiration may get us started, but it never keeps us going. And that's where motivation works. And motivation doesn't come in a bottle. Motivation is, scientifically speaking, a series of small behaviors. And here's some ways to enhance the motivation. Track your progress by recording or charting the behavior in question. Reward your successes. Reinforce yourself for each step with a healthy treat or a compliment. Perhaps even create a reward contract with a loved one. And you also need to arrange your environment to help rather than hinder you. Limit exposure to any high-risk situations. Create reminders. So we don't need to think of motivation as something we have. Motivation are specific behaviors we build into our day.
1-800-989-8255. Ginny Scal on Twitter says, what if you don't start your resolution on January 1st? Should you still make a resolution even if you're not prepared to start on January 1st?
We say take resolutions seriously or don't take them at all. You can start a resolution on February 1st, March 1st, your birthday, the beginning of summer. People who push themselves prematurely into a resolution without having a specific action plan are quite likely to fail. So pick a day when you're ready. Set the quit date or the start date for the resolution. Make sure you're ready and then take it. The change of the calendar, Ira, may not be the right time for everybody.
So you do one thing at a time. You know, don't say I'm going to diet and quit smoking at the same time, because you'll never get them both done.
Well, there's some interesting research on that. And that is, it depends how much time and commitment you have. If the two resolutions are related, then it may make sense to do it together. For example, losing weight and increasing exercise. Most people see those things as going together. But if they're two very different resolutions, you may just be overwhelmed with the amount of time and energy that they call for. So we ask people never more than two. If they're related, two is great. Otherwise, just do one at a time.
Mm-hmm. Jody in Baton Rouge. Hi, Jody.
Hi.
Hi there.
Our family was a bit derailed with some unexpected twins. And so I had been talking to my 13-year-old and my 9-year-old about all of us making family resolutions this year, some things that we would like to do different now that the babies are almost two. We're trying to get back on target with some things, you know, instead of just babysitting and diaper changes and things like that. Do you have any suggestions on how to make it work for some family-type goals and resolutions?
Well, we sure do, and as a parent, I think we can all appreciate how we're derailed with the pressures and responsibilities of childhood. The family resolutions is a fascinating idea and one that can work quite well, presuming you could find a resolution the entire family is behind and not just one or two. Far too often we see parents who would love a resolution, but the kids really aren't into it. But if you can find one the whole group agrees with, then you have the built-in social support. At that point, we would say, please publicly declare your resolution as a family. Such a public commitment is generally more successful than private decisions. Mm-hmm. Have the whole family create a reward contract. When we do this, we'll all reward each other this way. So not only for individual behavior, but for the entire family behavior. It's a lot easier taking that big old refrigerator out to the curb on trash day than to have one person struggling with it. Families can do it all together much more effectively than one alone.
Great idea. How's that?
That is great. Great.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much.
Happy New Year, Jody. Thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. We are talking with John Norcross about New Year's resolutions. Anything surprising also that you found in your research, Dr. Norcross?
Yeah, and that's about the slips, Ira. In one of our, one of our most recent studies, we found that people really slipped quite a lot. That is, most successful resolvers slipped in January. But they discovered that a slip, a momentary lapse in a resolution, need not be a fall. They picked themselves up and they recommitted themselves to the resolution after a slip. For example, 71% of our successful resolvers said their first slip had actually strengthened their efforts. But they know a slip didn't need to become a fall, or as we say it in the scientific research, a lapse didn't need to become a relapse. Mm-hmm. And the successful resolvers slip just as much in early January as the unsuccessful resolvers. So this is really encouraging news to everybody. Mm-hmm. Early slips may be a sign that you just need to refine your action plan, get back up, and do something.
Mm-hmm. Let's see if we can get one more call from Karen in Atlantic City. Hi, Karen.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I made a New Year's resolution in 1978 to start running, and I'm still going.
Good for you.
So I'm wondering at what point a resolution turns into obsession, especially when your knees are falling apart.
Well, first off, congratulations, Karen. That's an impressive resolution. And indeed, that's how the successful resolutions proceed. They're no longer something that you have to be all that mindful of. You've just totally integrated it into your life scheme, as it were. It's no longer a problematic behavior. It just becomes who you are, a new, healthy, daily habit. You're right, though. Even the best of behaviors can be taken too far. And whether that's your knees or time, sometimes we all need to learn a resolution to let go just a little bit of even the more positive elements in our life.
Is it why is it so hard for you to stop, Karen?
I fresh air. It's become how I think, actually. I'm on the boardwalk, which is beautiful. I've gotten slower, a lot slower. Not that I ever was that fast. The air, really, I'm just so used to it. Maybe I could just walk fast.
Well, it's the bounty of benefits that exercises generate for all of us. The time alone, the exercise, the scenery. Congratulations on doing it. But if your knees are hurting, everyone should remember that healthful walking is almost as beneficial as the running.
Karen, I have a suggestion for you.
Make
this year's new resolution to slow down, to walk instead of run, and see if you can keep that resolution.
Well, thank you. That's one of those resolutions I think that gets made for you.
Well, good luck and thanks for calling. And
thank you very much.
See you on the boardwalk.
Happy New Year.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Any last words here, Dr. Norcross?
Well, it would be, let's think of resolutions as marathons, not a 100-yard dash. We need to prepare for the long haul, the changed lifestyle, just as Karen discussed. And we should keep in mind that even if you're not successful this year, our research shows that virtually everyone who doesn't succeed this year will try again next year. This is a lifelong quest for improved behavior.
Thank you very much for those tips, Dr. Norcross, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. You're most welcome.
Dr. John Norcross is a clinical psychologist and distinguished professor of psychology at University of Scranton. We're going to resolve to take a short break, and when we come back, change gears and talk about different kinds of technology talk. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.
You're listening to The Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. The Mind and Heart Show is heard every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The number in the studio is 434-817-9470.
Welcome back to the Mind and Heart Show. This is your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. We are here every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. And stay tuned at the top of the hour when Andra Hakes will be here for her weekly show called Straight Talk, dealing with legal issues and LGBT issues. She's always has an interesting show, so please stay tuned for her. We were just listening to a podcast of Dr. John Norcross, who is a clinical psychologist up at the University of Scranton, who's done a lot of work on New Year's resolutions, what works, what doesn't work. And good to hear from his perspective. So have you made a New Year's resolution? If so, how has that worked for you in the past? Have you been successful with it? Have you been able to sustain it beyond the month of February? What works? And we got a few minutes, so we'd love to hear from you about that. You can call us here in the studio at 434-284-9470. Real quick check of the weather. Still holding at 36 degrees and sunny this morning. Very little wind. Humidity is at about 60%. Looking tonight for a low of 31 and clear, no precipitation, and then beautiful day on Sunday, though chilly, and we'll hit a high of 54 tomorrow on Sunday with, again, no precipitation. So we may just get through this winter without any snow. We certainly had a spring-like Christmas, so who knows? The weather has been really peculiar these days. So we've been talking about New Year's resolutions, what works, what doesn't work, and I wanted to just spend the last few minutes talking about some strategies that if you're really serious about keeping a New Year's resolution, these might be helpful. So what do we do? Let's talk about one set of suggestions, and then I'm going to introduce you to a whole different concept with some further suggestions. So the first thing we want to do is set an intention. We want to write it down. What do we want to do? I want to go to the gym three times a week, twice a week, once a week for the rest of this new year. Be specific. Have it set as a goal. Share it with someone. If you share your intention, that automatically creates a certain amount of accountability. It's really, really hard to do this stuff on our own. So come up with a realistic plan, set an intention, write it down, be specific, and share it with someone to create some accountability. Establish a cue, a reminder to start it, whatever that might be. So you might program your smartphone to ring a bell or give you a cue to remind you of what your goal is and making sure throughout the day that you're keeping it. So you want to have cues around to keep you reminded, because it's real easy to lose sight of it in our busy lives. You want to start modestly. You want to be reasonable, but again, have some sort of reminder. you want to do it as at designated times or in a designated way. You want to have a way of setting aside the time if you need. So if I say I'm going to go get up every morning and go to the gym at 7:30, or at least twice a week, then that builds it into my schedule. It begins not just I'm going to go twice this week, but I'm going to go on Monday and Thursday of this week, being fairly specific and building it and putting it into your calendar if necessary. And we want to have some rewards in there, not just the satisfaction of seeing us meet the goal, but also, other rewards. Do something fun if you've been consistent with keeping your intention, your resolution and intention for the last week. And then finally, track your progress. Years ago, I started keeping a graph. A daily graph of my weight. When I get up in the morning, I weigh myself and then I chart it on a graph. And what that does is, and there's some good research to support this, is it provides a different type of accountability. So if I, after Christmas, see that the graph is up 3 pounds, then that reminds me that I need to resolve to change my eating habits to make up for all the overeating that I did over the holidays. So have a way of tracking progress. There's all kinds of programs. If you want to lose weight, there's a free online program with an app called Lose It, LOSEIT, and it's a great program for monitoring what you eat, how many calories you burn. You can always get a Fitbit or some other type of tracker to keep track of how many steps you've walked. I have a friend that by getting a Fitbit resolved to walk 10,000 steps a day. It's monitored on his wrist, and he can then see, and he's lost probably 25 pounds by changing nothing else except increasing the amount of time that he's out there walking. So use technology to your advantage. Use it to help with your motivation, and that's just stack the deck in your favor, as we said earlier. So here we go. So we're talking about goals, intentions that are personally meaningful to you, breaking it down into achievable steps, increments, making it specific, letting others know to build in the accountability, and probably also very importantly, creating a fresh start if we have a setback or if we fail. So making sure that you give yourself some slack there. Don't get totally discouraged. Just resolve to pick up the pieces and move on. So the final thing I want to share with you today is some new research, which is really interesting to me and exciting. And it has to do with an approach to habit change. In the model, it's developed by another psychologist, and Dr. Gabriel Oettingen, Oettingen, and she calls it WOOP, WOOP, which stands for Wish, Outcome, Obstacle, Plan. And what her research has shown is that if we just try to use positive thinking about future performance or future goals or successes, that actually can make us less successful. We need to realistically incorporate in our thinking about our goals and resolutions the pitfalls, the roadblocks, the hurdles, because if we ignore those, they're gonna sneak up on us and undermine our success and our effectiveness. So she has demonstrated over the years in three areas: health domain, exercise, diet, academic domain, school, grades, attendance, and so forth. And in a personal domain, those three, dealing with relationships, commitments, and so on, that in each of these domains, that what's really effective is not just having a goal, but also bringing into the discussion in the mix a realistic view of the barriers and obstacles that are out there ready to trip you up. And so what she's doing is saying we can't just sort of have this pie in the sky kind of attitude and this positive thinking, because if we do, we're going to get blindsided by some of those very real barriers and obstacles that tend to come along and blindside us. So what does this mean practically? Well, it means that you sit down and really write out and delineate the obstacles, what's going to get in your way. So I want to quit smoking. So what's going to be hard about that? Well, smoking after a meal is a tough time for me. I've got to be extra vigilant about that. Being around other smokers is hard. Smelling smoke is hard. Put those into your plan. What are the potential hazards to the success of my plan? What are the potential roadblocks that I'm going to encounter as I try to quit smoking or lose weight or exercise more or whatever? So what she says is that by taking our goals, what she calls even our fantasies, and putting them up against the obstacles that stand in our way, that makes for a much more likely that we'll have a positive outcome. You know, all this pop psychology about positive thinking and so forth, and she's really demonstrated that it doesn't work just standing on its own. And the name that she's given to this approach is called mental contrasting. So we focus on the things, our goals and so forth, but then we also focus on the reality, our fears, our perceived barriers and so forth. So what she's doing with this approach is sort of taking the denial out of the equation, the denial that, you know, there are going to be barriers, the denial that there are going to be obstacles. You face the fact that these barriers and obstacles exist. You know, one place where you really see this is in 12-step programs, particularly AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, where you really deal with those things that are likely to cause you to pick up a drink. That's one of the things in the domains of being more healthy that she talks about is managing our alcohol intake. So whether it's quit smoking, lose weight, get better grades, have better relationships, negotiate in business more effectively, she's saying in each case we need to bring in the clear barriers as we can think them through rather than try to deny them. So there's a link to a short exercise on this method on her website, and you can stream it and listen to it. It just takes a couple minutes, and it'll walk you through the steps of this WHOOP, as she calls it, which is wish, outcome, and obstacle plan. The website is WHOOPMyLife, WOOPMYLIFE.org, WHOOPMyLife.org, for Dr. Gabriel Ottingen's approach to dealing with barriers and overcoming resolutions. So, much to think about. Set those goals, but do so realistically. Try to acknowledge the barriers and the obstacles. Get a buddy. Break things down into realistic steps. And use whatever other tools available to you to achieve your goals, and perhaps your resolutions can be more successful this year. So, wishing everyone a Happy New Year. We will be back here next week from 9 to 10 with the Mind and Heart Show. Check our Facebook page at Mind and Heart Show for the topic and any guest we might have coming up. You can also hear the show, today's show, usually by this coming Monday at CVillePodcast.com. CVillePodcast.com, where you can replay today's show, and if you didn't have a chance to listen to all of us today. So wishing you a Happy New Year. Stay tuned for Andra Hakes and Straight Talk on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.